Ed, the beauty of what we're talking about today is that we're talking about the fundamentals that will be around forever, whereas a lot of people are teaching fashionable, trendy techniques and strategies that are working today. But what we're talking about here is some of the strategies that have been around and are not going to go out of date. Is there any key strategies or ideas that you can think of that people could avoid making today?
Yeah, well, there's three that I could talk about straight away there. I think you're absolutely right. I think that what we're doing here, it's what's called universal principles. It's things that will pretty much always be the same. You know, it's the difference between, if you go back 100 years and think about how a business would make money 100 years ago and get clients, customers, whatever. A lot of things will have changed, of course, because of technologies and because of, you know, fashions. But there'll be certain principles about how you attract somebody to come and want to deal with you. And a lot of that stuff, you know, universally, it doesn't change. And even when it comes to websites. And so principles such as, you know, meet your client where they are, talk to them in the language that they understand, and talk to them about the benefits and the help that they're actually looking for. That's never going to change. All that might change is how you go about doing that. So I guess it's that shiny object syndrome of don't, if you're one of those people that goes online and buys every single product that you find that promises you, you know, the easy, quick, simple way to get lots and lots of people on your website, to get lots and lots of clients. I just urge caution, because it's shiny object syndrome. It's thinking that there's this shiny thing that's going to just deliver everything for you without you having to do any work. The truth is, there's a process you've got to go through to number one, attract people to your website, and then secondly, get them compelled to contact you, to take action, to desperately want to become your client. And I think that's the way that we're approaching it. So that's the first thing.
I don't know about you, Ed, but when I'm coaching with my clients, and particularly I find it common in the people helping profession, whether they be therapists, coaches, or other kind of practitioners, there's almost this kind of stigma around marketing. It's almost perceived to be kind of a dirty word.
Yes.
Do you find that?
Yeah, totally. I can give you two examples just over the last couple of weeks where I've worked with two people with a very different mindset. And again, mindset often is a strategy. You know, it's a strategy in terms of you decide how you're, what you're going to believe about a particular situation. Now, I can think of two people. One, like I say, somebody I spoke to very, very recently, and he told me that he doesn't like being in business, doesn't like business and marketing. And frankly, that's reflected in the fact that he's got no clients, because, you know, business, if you're going to work for yourself as a practitioner, you're going to go out there and get clients, bring them to your website, bring them to your practice. That's a business. You know, that's the attraction marketing side of business. And if you don't like being in business, you think it's a dirty word, as you said, then that's going to come across. It's going to come across unconsciously, but it's also going to come across explicitly, because when I looked at this guy's website, it was very clear he'd taken a very academic approach. It was all about qualifications and research and academic stuff about hypnosis, which is what he did. But there was a real lack of communication, because it was very, very clear he didn't want to have to sell himself or to sell benefits or any of that stuff. On the other hand, a lady that I worked with a very different mindset, somebody who said she loved being in business. This is something that she loved doing, and she was really looking forward to launching. This came across in her website in a different way. This came across that, wow, this person looks very enthusiastic in their photo. Their language is enthusiastic. They want to be there. They want to do business with me. They want to help me. And it was very inspiring, frankly, and it came across as very genuine, very compelling. And, you know, it was that these people were doing different things, but it wasn't so much, you couldn't tell them what to do. It was more that their mindset was dictating what they did. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Again, we've talked before about how people's mindset and their own belief in self-value comes mm-hmm. across unconsciously in the way they market themselves. And some people don't like to be businessy or salesy. I think absolutely you're correct that it reflects in the message that they're portraying to people. And
It's amazing, actually, what beliefs will do for someone. It's, you know, the way I describe it is you're wearing the clothes of the beliefs that you hold, and that's how people will see you, and that's how you'll feel about yourself. If you're wearing, you know, if you're wearing robes, you will feel important. If you're wearing a certain uniform, you'll feel that that's the relevant behaviours. You know, the behaviours will be relevant to the uniform you're wearing, and, you know, I think we can do that with mindset as well as physical clothing. I'll give you another example. Two people I spoke to recently, you know, and this is a lot more straightforward. One person I spoke to, a lady in the UK, was telling me there's no clients at the moment. You know, the economy's stuffed. There's nobody's got any money. Everybody's struggling. There's no clients. This is difficult. You know, when someone's got a belief, they don't tell you they've got a belief. They say it as if it's a fact, and that's when it's fossilized. It's stuck in there. And, you know, this lady's saying, it's just impossible. Nobody's got any money. There are no clients at the moment. It's much harder than it used to be. It's impossible to get clients. And, you know, sure enough, the measurable result of that belief system is she has no clients. I spoke to another woman, you know, same business, same skill set, same experience, same training, same kind of training, but a very different belief set. Now, with her, I looked at the results first. I said, how are you doing? She said, my diary's full. I've got more clients than I need. It's wonderful. Very, very busy indeed. And I kind of thought, well, you know, something different's happening here. There's a lot more energy. There's a lot more positivity. But there's a belief underneath that. And there's something different going on. And I said to her, you know, why do you... And this has happened so many times, Christian. You wouldn't believe it. I said to her, why do you think it is? I've got so many people I'm speaking to and they're saying they're struggling. Why have you got so many clients? And she said, well, I guess I never thought I wouldn't. When I started this business, I just assumed I would have clients. Didn't enter my head that I
would. Believed it.
Well, yeah, and there's a bit more to it. There's another element to it. She'd actually been in business before, running a training company, completely different industry, but she'd been very successful. And success will help you build that mindset. You know, the whole thing is a self-fulfilling prophecy. It's a positive circle that goes round and round.
Of course, if you've got that business background, absolutely, that's going to be an advantage. Yeah.
But it wasn't the business skill set here. It very, very clearly came down to the fact that she believed, not like a mantra or an affirmation of I will be successful, but she actually assumed that she would be. Now you can have positive assumptions, you can have negative assumptions, and obviously her positive assumptions, I'm going to be busy, just reflected her language, her enthusiasm, and the way she communicated. And I expect that her clients actually are also benefiting greatly from that kind of mindset, because she'll make the same assumption for them. She'll, when she's working with clients, she'll assume that they're going to be successful, and if they're not capable of doing that themselves, she'll do it for them.
Ed, I can hear another call coming together here all together now on this very topic. But to help people listening who may be struggling with that kind of belief factor and their current existing mindset, and again, we've said that many people, particularly in the sort of hypnosis NLP profession, don't always apply the skills for themselves, but there are other people listening who are not in that profession. So if you could give some starting points for people, whether they be mantras, whether they be positive affirmations, to help them learn and adopt a stronger, more positive belief factor about their business, what success strategies could you kick them off with?
The strategy that I would suggest is to start using, you know, kind of... I mean, anybody who's done any training in NLP or any kind of persuasion communication will understand the value of, for instance, presuppositions. You know, it's kind of turning those assumptions round in a way that they work for you. So rather than, if you find yourself saying, you know, I don't have any clients, then start saying, I don't have any clients yet. Because as soon as you say, I don't have any clients yet, the old unconscious mind, you know, the subconscious is starting to work out how it's going to get them, because there's an assumption that they will come. It's about changing internal language. If you say to yourself, it's impossible to get clients in the current economy, well, challenge yourself and say, you know, I haven't worked out how to get clients in the current economy yet. I haven't worked it out yet. That kind of language will create internal language that will get you thinking in a much more possibility-based way. And, you know, why is that important to websites? Because we always need to join the dots. You know, this call's about websites, so let's do some concrete, tangible work on websites. Well, use the same strategy in your website. Don't say to people, you know, are you struggling to stop smoking? Tell people on your website, you know, I am dedicated to helping people quit smoking. If you haven't worked out how you're going to stop yet, then get in touch with me. I can get you making progress. I can put you on the pathway to becoming a non-smoker. Do you see the point? It's not you're changing your internal language, but you're also changing the language that you use to talk to your potential clients. Because if your client thinks that you believe in them, then you become their obvious choice. And that communication starts on your website, quite frankly, these days.
Absolutely. It's very, 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 very powerful. Ed, I've also heard you talk, you know, go straight back to websites here. I've heard you talk about the Google mindset. For anybody who's not heard that term before, what do you refer to with that?
Yeah.
Some of those mistakes.
I talk about Google love. Google is a funny, funny beast. But they're also very, very simple and straightforward. I don't mean simple, stupid. They're very, very clever people. But Google love, getting Google love relies on a lot of things, but it mostly relies on you having that simple, clinical Google mindset. Now, Google's mission, as they put it, is to put together and publish and make available all of the world's information. Okay. It's a huge task, a huge goal. It's kind of abstract in some ways, but you can see where they're coming from. They want to make all the information in the world available. But what they also want to do, and this is particularly relevant with their search engines, they want to make it relevant. They want to take the relevant stuff and the high quality stuff, and they want to rank it. You know, they want to rank that stuff at the top. And so, if you want people to find you, you know, something that's, you know, some of you guys listening to this call, you really need to challenge yourself here. Do you ever find yourself saying to somebody else, I want to be top of the search engines? Tell me how to be top of the search engines. Christian, you must have heard that so many times.
Oh, yeah. It's
it's a
big ask.
But it's a ridiculous question. I had someone the other day, okay, she's a hypnotherapist in the US. I won't tell you which city, but she said to me, I mean, let's make one up. Let's pretend it's Los Angeles, okay? I won't tell you where she really is, but let's pretend she's in Los Angeles. And she said to me, Ed, I want to be top of the search engines. And I said, what for? Bacon and eggs in Washington? House cleaning services in Vancouver? You know, it's crazy. People are saying, I want to be top of the search engines. It's absolutely imperative that you know what you want to be top of the search engines for. Because otherwise, again, you're asking the wrong questions. And it's amazing how Google will rank websites. Because it sounds like a silly thing, but I've known people in the past where they've got a website for, let's say, hypnotherapy, and they're top of the search engines for house cleaning. Maybe because they put in their About Us page that they used to have a house cleaning company. There's a very famous hypnotist. I mean, this was years ago, so I'm not criticizing in any way, but it's just a funny memory I have from probably about 10 years ago. A very, very famous hypnotist in the States that a lot of people would know. And he combined his hypnotherapy website with his car sales website. He had a car yard. You might know who I'm talking about. It doesn't matter. But the point was that people would, they'd find his hypnosis services and then they'd click one of his links and find themselves, or they, you know, they'd go to the basic level domain and they'd find themselves on a website that sold cars. It's crazy.
And it's still a common mistake.
Totally. That's an extreme version, an extreme example.
Yeah, but a lot of people in their people helping profession can work with a lot of different things.
Mm.
and they make a mistake of trying to appeal to everyone, which kind of brings us to another mistake that I see a lot of people making, is it's not understanding what they want their website to do.
And yeah, totally. And that definitely starts for me with that highest level. And when you read the ebook, you guys, you know, when you read through that ebook again and revisit the information, you'll see that the major goal for me, it's always, what's that main key term, that thing that categorizes, positions you, and it's what you do and where you are, basically. Unless you're working as a coach, a very specialist coach, you know, maybe you're an ADD coach, a relationship coach, or whatever, and you work across boundaries, so it doesn't, you know, you do a lot of your calls on Skype. That can be different, but you've still probably got a local base, and so the geography is important. Now, what do I mean by that? Well, the lady I was talking to, when she said, you know, I want to be top of the search engines, what she probably should start with is, I want to be top of the search engines for hypnotherapy in Los Angeles, or quit smoking services, Los Angeles, or something like that, you know, whatever whatever her target is. Because as soon as you change your language in that way, again, it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. You start doing the right things, you start reverse engineering, looking at whatever people are doing, because you have this goal for being number one for hypnotherapy services in Los Angeles, for instance. It gives you focus. And Google immediately says, relevance. Because Google wants to put you to the top of a search phrase or several search phrases that is relevant. The Google mindset, basically, Christian, is all about saying to the world, here is a list of search results, and we're going to put the most relevant and the highest quality at the top. And they really, for the most part, they judge quality by relevance. So if your website, your main headline on your homepage of your website says, hypnotherapy in Los Angeles, you've just taken the first step towards getting to the top of Google. That's the Google mindset, nothing else. And it's all done by robots, it's automatic. So you're dealing with a robot.
And I think all these things help, as you say, with focus and clarification. If people know what they want their websites to do, if they know what they want their most wanted response to be, mm-hmm. if they're highlighting their expertise and their specialism, all that's going to just come together so much easier, isn't it?
Yeah. The first thing I did when I was in Oxford in the UK and I wanted to be, you know, right at the top of the search engines for hypnotherapy in Oxford, I also wanted to be top. That was my most wanted response, you know. I didn't come up with that phrase, by the way. I think it was a guy called Ken McCarthy. It was one of the early kind of pioneers in online marketing who came up with this idea of most wanted response, and that a website should always have its most wanted response. But I think, you know, I decided to apply that to every page of my website. So again, it's a categorization thing. So I wanted my homepage to be number one of the search results for hypnotherapy in Oxford, hypnosis in Oxford. I also had a page on quit smoking, so I wanted to be number one in the search engines. Not my homepage, but my stop smoking page. I wanted that to be number one for stop smoking and quit smoking in Oxford. And so on and so forth. And you know, Christian, the thing that really balances well with most wanted response is metrics, the idea of measuring. You know, metrics are the key numbers that you measure to tell you how your practice is doing, especially your website, for instance. And so what I did was, you know, there's nothing like clarity. Sometimes clarity hurts because it's like looking in the mirror and thinking, oh, you know, I need to lose some weight, or I need to start smiling a bit more. Or it's just taking a snapshot of where you are and thinking it might not be exactly what you want, but it's a starting point. And so that's what I did. I keyed all of these search terms into Google for, you know, hypnotherapy in Oxford, stop smoking in Oxford, lose weight Oxford, self-confidence services Oxford, all of this stuff. This is back in 2001, and I just took a snapshot of where I was. If I was on page 5, position 7, I wasn't very happy about that, but at least I had clarity and I could stop being in denial. It's like, that's where I am. And then a month later, I would measure again and I'd be up to page 3. And a month later, I'd measure again and I'd be up to page 1. And then eventually I would be position 1, page 1. And I, for anybody who doesn't know, there was a point at which the Oxford, you know, the forget the Oxford thing, I was at the top of the search engines for the search phrase hypnotherapy, the search phrase hypnosis, I was like 2 and 3. Stop smoking, I was on page 1. Lose weight, I was on page 1. And this was globally, this was in the whole world, with just a couple of websites. And I'm not saying that that's easy to do nowadays. It's a lot harder, but you can definitely get right to the top for some of your chosen phrases, keyword phrases, you know, for your local city. And basically, that's what people are looking for anyway. If someone wants a hypnotherapist, for instance, or a life coach or counsellor or a therapist, they're probably searching locally at the moment. And so you can do that. You can achieve that. But you've got to measure it. Otherwise, you don't know where you're starting from and you don't know where you want to get to. The people who say...
What you measure tends to grow. You know, what we focus on, we get more of. So
yeah, absolutely.
It's fundamental.
Absolutely wise words. What you focus on is what gets done. That's absolutely right. So when someone's saying, I want to be top of the search engines, it's a cluttered thought. It doesn't mean anything. But as soon as you say, I want to be number one for hypnotherapy in Los Angeles, suddenly you've got clarity. You know what you want. Now you need to say, well... Okay, that's my destination. Where am I right now? I'm on page 6. I'm on no page. I'm not even in the top 10. But you know you want to be number 1. Number 2 or number 3 would be pretty cool, you know, on page 1. But at least you've got a goal. Your metrics are kind of, where am I now? And it gives you a map. It's like a GPS system. Like you say, that as soon as you switch on a GPS in your car and say, you know, you put in the coordinates of where you want to go to, the destination... The computer starts working out how to get there. It's exactly what you just said, Christian.
And I was saying it with a client today, you know, and I hear myself saying it a lot. You wouldn't get into your car and program your sat-nav, your GPS, and say, well, I don't want to go here and I don't want to go there. You have to tell it where to go and what to do. And that's the same with your business. And for me, I don't know about you, Ed, but I find that one of the reasons that people don't progress, one of the reasons people procrastinate and don't get on and do the things that you suggest to them, mm-hmm. is because of their own lack of clarity. They don't know what it is they want.
Yeah.
So the sooner you kind of get that clear in your own mind, so much of this will fall into place and become a lot easier for you.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you've nailed it. I think there's two things. There's number one, some people don't know what they want, which is terrible, because you can't get any momentum. You know, a lot of the people on this call, a lot of people like myself, we're spending our time working, helping people improve what they do unconsciously, automatically, instinctively. And, you know, this is the subconscious part of your mind, as we all know, is very, very goal-directed. It's absolutely goal-directed, and sometimes if you don't have goals, the whole thing starts to melt down. So, yeah, I think that the one thing that people don't know is what they want, and so start to nail that straight away. You know, anyone on this call, if you can't strategically tell me what your plan is, what it is that you want at the end of that plan, that's a problem. And then the second problem is, once you do know where you want to get to, people tend to not know where they are now. Get a snapshot, you know, start to measure where you are now so that you've got those two coordinates. Do it for your clients as well. They'll love you for it. You know, it's amazing how many clients come to see me and they don't want what they've got. They're very clear on that, and they'll spend half an hour explaining all the things they don't want. But once I can get them to really clarify, you know, in a holistic, ecological, appropriate manner, to be able to tell me what it is they'd like to get to, even if it's quite abstract to start with, you know, I'd like to feel this and feel that, at least we're starting to get down to what they do want, and then we can gently kind of help them understand where they are now. It's the same thing with a website. It creates a map. There's nothing better than having a map.
Ed, another mistake I often come across, and I guess this is really two mistakes in one, is people, I guess part of the reason is a lot of people are spending so much time creating their website, thinking about how it goes, they actually lose sight of the fact that they don't end up seeing it through their client's eyes.
Mm-hmm.
So it all becomes about sort of them rather than the client. Would you agree?
Yes. Yes, I would, and I'll give you another example from very recently, and it's kind of a mean little trick that I sometimes play on people. It's not a trick. It's just, you know, I'm a big believer in that whole idea of revelation, not explanation. I'm a very big believer that you can tell people till you're blue in the face. They really need to kind of get it internally. They need to see it done, or they need to have it demonstrated. And I did something with, you know, an absolutely lovely woman, a client of mine, a professional client, you know, who's running a practice and building a practice. And she's just, you know, it's a funny thing. She's the most empathetic, positive person with her clients. Her clients love her and trust her, and she's all about her clients. Yet when she makes the classic mistake of when it comes to her website, all of a sudden she forgets she's got those skills. It's like her language on her website, it's like it's a different person. And the way I demonstrated it, I said, look, I won't tell you her name, but I said, go and go to the About Us page and go to the home page and read through that page. You know, you've got whatever, 400, 500, 600 words. In fact, I think it might have been a lot more than that. But I said, I want you to read through that page, and I want you to have two lists. On the first list, I just want you to count how many times you use words like I, me, mine. And then on the other list, I want you to count how many times you use words like you, your, yours. And the proportion, as you can probably imagine, was for every time she used a you word, she used 4 or 5 I words. I do this, I do this, this is where I train, this is why I, you know, I'm so enthusiastic, this is why I'm so passionate about doing this, and I love doing this, and this is my dream, and this is my mission. And very little kind of, you know, I'm here for you, my job is to help you to improve your life. This is all about your goals and where you want to get to. The proportion was really skewed towards I, me, mine. And, you know, I say, guys, go and do an audit. Go and do this for your own marketing materials. And your website's just a marketing material at the end of the day. It's a, you know, it's a marketing communication, if you will. Go and look for your website right now. Go for your homepage and your About Us page and any page you want to. And look at the language again. Are you talking about yourself? Or are you talking about your client, the person you want to help? And if you're using more of that kind of I, me, mine language, you might want to think about flipping that round. What do you think, Christian?
Again, that ties back to the most wanted response. If you want them to respond, you've got to make it about them. And in marketing, it's that classic, you know, they're going to be tuning in to what's in it for me.
Nobody is ever going to go and see, for instance, a life coach because that person is passionate about life coaching. It's irrelevant. Nobody's listening to this call because Ed and Christian are passionate about websites. They're listening to this call because Ed and Christian are passionate about helping you improve your website. It's as simple as that.
And on that note of language, how many times do you see people with their websites and they're just talking in... It's almost like that. It's just an online brochure in terms of they're just replicating almost a written document online rather than making it conversational and in their language. Would you say that's a problem and a mistake you see a lot of?
Just give me an example, Christian.
Again, people, it's similar to what you just said with the client that you've got, that they're not talking in their own spoken language. They're trying to talk in somebody else's voice.
Oh, yeah, I know what you mean. Well... See, I want to talk in my client's voice. I want to show them in my words, my language, and really my passion to help them, that it's them I'm speaking for. If someone's... Okay, I'll give you an example. We've quit smoking. I know I use this example a lot, but it's just such a straightforward example. I find quit smoking works so easy when you get this whole mindset. When somebody wants to quit smoking, almost probably 90% of the time... they're very scared. It's not that they don't want to stop smoking, it's that they don't want it to be horrible and tough and difficult and painful, and they're just scared it's going to be horrible. It's going to be difficult, horrible, scary. They're going to spend their whole life, every minute, every day, every hour, forever, wishing they could have a cigarette. Okay, that's the truth. And if I tell that story, you know, notice the word tell, if I tell that story on my webpage about quit smoking, surprise, surprise, the person reading it says, oh my goodness, it's like you're reading my mind. I couldn't have said it better myself. How did you know that? And you see, it's because I'm telling. I'm not writing in some academic way. I'm telling it how it is. Not in my world, in their world. And it's such an important thing. And like you were saying, you know, I can't remember how you put it, Christian, but you said about them talking, how they talk on their website. A lot of people don't understand that. A website is not a written document. Okay, this is absolutely fundamental to this whole exercise of us helping people to build busy websites. A website is not a written document, like an academic research document in a library. It's not like that. A website absolutely must talk to people. You know, I'd say put down your pen, put down your keyboard, grab a voice recorder, a dictaphone, and talk in that language that you talk to your clients when you're trying to get them enthusiastic and positive and focused, and record it, put it on your website. You'll be amazed at the difference it makes.
That's a huge tip. That's a good one.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, when me and you are talking, Christian, and we get quite passionate and really enthusiastic about what we're doing, I'm particularly guilty of really at times getting very emotional about what I'm talking about when I'm trying to help people. And I often say, if I just recorded that and wrote it down and put it on a website, it would probably be very impactful compared to, say, if I sat down and really thought about what I should say.
Yeah.
It's a different matter. I remember when I was at university, I was never the most gifted student in terms of academic, rigorous research. It just wasn't my strength at all. But I sometimes found that when I was writing an essay for a professor, if I just let my emotions take over a little bit and really started to talk from the heart rather than from the head, I might fall down on points for academic rigor, but often I would get a pretty good grade because I touched the professor, I touched the person who was marking it in a way that maybe a lot of people didn't. And I would sometimes get quite a good grade because I'd inspired them or challenged them emotionally in some way.
And one thing you can do from a marketing perspective, and this is a great technique that I was taught years ago, and that is to kind of create who your ideal client is. Imagine what they look like, what the demographics are, and you're writing your website, you're talking as if they're in front of you, and you're conveying that message to that one person, not trying to appeal to everybody online. And as you say, if you can do that on a dictaphone or a voice recorder.
Yeah, absolutely. It's called an avatar, and we'll talk about that a lot when we do our we're going to run some copywriting training in the Master Practitioner series, and when we teach people how to actually write copy, because that we can't do that justice here. We're covering it in quite a broad way, and hopefully giving you some really good ideas of how to write your website copy. But website copy is the one thing you've got to be really careful about getting other people to do it for you. It's something that should come from the heart, and it's a conversation, not a lecture.
Using the wrong language, the one thing that's going to guarantee is that disassociation with clients. If your web copy and your spoken language don't match up,
there's
going to be a total disconnect.
I just thought of another really amusing example from Quit Smoking. This was a hypnotist who had a page on Quit Smoking, and they asked me to review their website. This was very recently, I'll never name names because it's not fair, but this was a particular hypnotist, and they had this page on Quit Smoking, and it was just clearly obvious to me that they knew nothing about, they probably hadn't seen many smoking clients, they certainly couldn't have ever smoked themselves or know too much about how people think, because it was just completely wrong. They'd made so many assumptions and got them all wrong. This page would have people clicking off the website in less than a second. It kind of started off with a headline like, "Are you disgusted with your smoking habit? Are you sick of smelling of cigarettes and sick of people telling you that you shouldn't smoke? And are you ashamed of yourself and you wish you could get rid of that dirty, smelly habit?" And it carried on in that vein, and you think I'm exaggerating. I can promise you I'm probably under-exaggerating. It was just horrible. And no smoker would ever, ever resonate with that. The words were wrong, the language was wrong, the sentiment was wrong. Smokers don't want you telling them they're disgusting. Most of the time they don't do that themselves. They don't think about it. And when they do, what do you do when you're ashamed and you feel that you're not in control of your decisions, or you feel sad or upset, well, if you're a smoker, I'll tell you exactly what you do. You light a cigarette. And a page like that would probably serve no purpose on your website other than to get someone to smoke a cigarette. Same with lose weight. If you use your copywriting, your text conversation piece on your lose weight page, if you make people feel ashamed for being overweight, well, guess what? They're going to go and comfort eat. They're not going to see you as their saviour, that's for sure.
Again, this will touch on a lot more in the where we start to talk about copy. But again, it's fairly simple and basic in marketing that people misunderstand or make the mistake of not linking or focusing too much on the features and not linking it with the benefits.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it's kind of me and you. What examples and suggestions do you have for people on ensuring they don't make that mistake?
Which one, Christian?
Not sort of highlighting the benefits of what they're offering and
absolutely.
Sort of the features.
Yeah, absolutely. It's about joining, you know, what, number one, what are you saying? And then secondly, why are you saying it? What's the relevance? It's the so what factor, isn't it? So what? So what? Who cares? So somebody tells you on their website, and you see this a lot, I trained with the such and such academy. They are the best therapeutic coaching school in the world. Let's say it was, you know, we were talking about something that's a random example. Let's say Reiki, you know, it's pronounced differently by different people that say it, but where I came from, they pronounced it Reiki. I trained with the best Reiki school in the world. So what? Who cares? Would you agree? I mean, it sounds harsh and brutal, but at the end of the day, Christian, if I went to your website and I was looking for help with my stress issues, you know, I felt very stressed and anxious, and I went to your website and it said, I'm Christian Baker, I trained with the best Reiki academy in the world, and this is their name, and this is the name of their professor who was an innovator. Do you know, I'm just saying, so what?
It links back to what we're saying, and it's about making it about the prospective client. It's about tuning to what they're interested in, you and I both encourage people to portray their professionalism and highlight the quality of their training, etc., but that shouldn't be your main focus.
No, not at all. There's ways to do it. It's, to me, that's one of those things that is a must. I'm not going to go, especially with something invasive, let's say acupuncture, which, you know, is mildly invasive, or if I was going to go and have, like, I'm going to the dentist later, so I want to know that my dentist is very well qualified, mostly because of the invasive nature and, you know, and the potential downside. But even if I went to see a therapist, a coach, whatever, I still want to know they've done their training and that they're professional and credible. But that's a must, you know, that's an absolute must. I need to see there's some kind of a certificate, there's some letters, they look professional. But that's the logical part. That's the conscious, logical, rational thought of that must happen, okay? But it's not what will make the decision for me. Ultimately, I'll make my decision emotionally as to who I choose. And, you know, just to kind of join the dots there, to close that loop, the person who says, I trained with the best Reiki academy in the world, why is that important? You know, so what will answer the question, you know, because people are always saying, so what? We're living in a very skeptical world, a world where we're oversold. Things are pushed at us all the time. More information than we can possibly handle. We don't need more. We don't need people telling us they trained with so-and-so unless they're prepared to explain why that's relevant. You know, so what? Well, the so what is, I trained with the best Reiki school in the United States. So you can rest assured that your practitioner is professional, credible, highly trained, and has all of the skills necessary to help you to overcome your stress issues. It's a very different proposition. Because now it's like, now I understand why you told me that. Now I understand the relevance. Ed used to be a smoker. So what? Well, the fact that Ed used to be a smoker is relevant because it means I can empathise with you. I understand where you're coming from. I know the whole world's probably pushing you and bullying you to stop smoking. But at the end of the day, it's not that easy. It's actually, it can be quite difficult to make the decision to become a non-smoker. And it's a very powerful habit. And it feels like it's going to be the hardest thing ever. That's why it's relevant that Ed used to smoke. You see my point?
Absolutely, absolutely. And listening to you there, I know you're just using examples off the top of your head, but another mistake I see people make is either failing to promise anything or making promises too big. So it's kind of hype or nothing. So, you know, how can people ensure that they're not over-promising but not under-delivering either?
At the end of the day, marketing all comes down to promises. You know, a lot of people are not comfortable with making a promise. Okay. Now, I understand the issue of guarantees. I understand it's not necessarily ethical to use guarantees.
It's not.
Depending on how it's done, I use guarantees, but they're not the unethical kind. You know, you will quit smoking, I guarantee it. There's ethical problems with that. Okay. It's a very, very famous quit smoking company that they publish a 90-whatever% success rate, like 95% success rate, something like that, and they guarantee that you'll quit. But when you read the small print, what you find out is that 95% is based on people taking up their free follow-ups. So anybody who... And you can't have your money back. It's a money-back guarantee. You can't have your money back unless you attend a follow-up at least two or three times. So basically what that means is you go and do your quit smoking. If you find out a few weeks later that you've started again, you can't have your money back. You have to go and attend a follow-up session. And if you attend the follow-up session and you still smoke, you have to attend another follow-up session. And if you still smoke, then you can get your money back. And unfortunately, as we all know, anybody who does quit smoking work, we all know that some people just start again because they want to. They pay $200 to quit smoking, they stop smoking for 2 weeks, they make their $200 back in savings, and then they start again. And it's like a rational thought process of, you know, oh, well, I've got my money back. And they don't want to go to a follow-up session. And they smoke again, and they get on with their lives, and they're happy smoking, and that's their choice. But this famous stop smoking organisation counts them as a success story. Now, to me, that's unethical. I don't like that because it's not true. I'm very, very ethical about the way I guarantee my smoking. I'll say, you know, I guarantee that I will put in my best efforts. If you put your best efforts in, if you do everything you're asked in terms of you're listening to your CD I give you and getting to the appointments on time and putting in your very best effort, if you do that, I guarantee that there's a very, very good chance that you're going to become a non-smoker. In fact, if you're prepared to keep coming back for follow-ups and to not give up, to keep coming back for as long as it takes, then I guarantee that you will be successful. And I think that's ethical. That's absolutely fine. It's a promise. You know, if you don't give up, I won't give up. I don't care how long it takes. I will get you there. I will. If you really desperately want to be a non-smoker, you absolutely desperately want to achieve that goal in your life, I promise you I will get you there as long as you don't give up, as long as you keep coming back. And that's a strong promise. That's a powerful promise. But it's reasonable for me. I will get someone there eventually. And a lot of people are very nervous to make those kind of promises because they think they have to hype it up and do the money back guarantees. This is nothing to do with money back. That's a complete... what's the word? It's a distortion of value. It's a terrible thing. You know, your time is valuable, and if you're prepared to spend extra time with somebody and you're not going to charge them extra, so, you know, once you've paid to become a non-smoker and I'll give you extra time. That's a fantastic value proposition, and it's a very powerful promise. And I suggest to everybody listening, on your website, in the way you promote yourself, the way you talk about your services, just think about what's the biggest, most powerful, most audacious promise that you can make that person that isn't hype, that isn't unethical, that isn't untrue. An ethical promise. What's an ethical promise that you can make that will blow people away? They'll be like, wow, that's amazing. Because you can do it. But it's a question for people to answer individually.
Yeah, not one size fits all at all.
But most people, they either overpromise by just hype, you know, just hypey stuff that makes me cringe, because everybody knows, you know, everybody can tell. But then probably more people are guilty of underpromising, of just using their credentials, their training, their passion for what they do, those kind of things as a way of suggesting that's a benefit. It's not. It's really a feature. You know, if I'm passionate about what I do, that's a feature of what I do. That's a feature. The benefit is that that means that I believe in your ability to become fit and healthy and confident, to live your very best life. I believe in that more than you do. That's the benefit.
Ed, I don't know why I've not mentioned it before, but a glaring mistake has just jumped to my mind that I see people making so much. And that's they've gone to the trouble of putting the website up, but they've made it extremely, extremely difficult for people to get in touch. And it's one of my pet hates.
That they can't contact you.
Absolutely, absolutely. And when we all know that people are only on your site for a few seconds before they make a decision as to whether they're going to stay or
leave. Yeah. I mean, as we've covered...
Mm. Yeah, and if you have to search around to look for somebody's phone number or address or email,
I know
address,
it's awful. It's awful. It's and again, a lot of these points. Yeah, a lot of these points. I mean, people might be nodding and agreeing and thinking that's a good idea, but seriously, go to your website and make the change now. I mean, if you don't tell people on every page of your website which city you're based in, you're making a terrible mistake. That's the first thing. We've covered that to death, I think. But secondly, even when you've done that, and people think, great, Christian, he can help me. I love what he's saying. I can see he's in Northampton, so that's where I live. Perfect. How do I get in touch with him? I've only got 2 minutes, and I'm at work, and I've got to come off my lunch break. I'll probably forget about this later, so I really need to flick him an email now or write down his number or put his number in my cell phone. Where is it? Where's the contact details? I can't find them. Click. Bye. And that's possibly the end of that. Now, as you rightly say, Christian, that, you know, if you've got a free phone number, an 0800 number or something like that, put it at the top of every page. Put your number on every page. Also, make sure that whenever people are, I don't know if we've said this before, Christian, but with any website, there's the area that we call above the fold. In real estate terms, it's your most pricey, expensive part of your real estate of your website is what people can read without scrolling. It's the equivalent of in the olden days, years ago, when the newspaper used to land on your doorstep in the morning and you sat there, you've made yourself a coffee and some toast and you're sitting there ready to read the newspaper. It's the part of the newspaper that you don't have to unfold. It's the headline. It's the stuff that jumps out at you before you have to actually unfold the newspaper. That's why it's called above the fold. And that is where your headline should be. That's where your phone number should be. That's where your photo should be. It's a very, very important thing.